All right. Good morning. My watch shows it's 8:30, so we are going to get started. My name is Hope Hogan, and I have been designated as the administrative law judge at the request of the Public Service Commission for this hearing. Let the record reflect it's June 27th, 2023 at 8:30 a.m. This is a time, date, and place set by the notices of hearing issued by the North Dakota Public Service Commission on June 15th, 2023, in case number PU-22-391. All right, is this better? Yeah. Sorry. This hearing is being held today in the Pioneer Room at the State Capitol in Bismarck, North Dakota. As we begin, I would ask that everybody please check your phones to make sure they're either silenced or turned off. On April 21st, 2023, SCS Carbon Transport LLC filed model outputs and a risk assessment with the commission. SCS Carbon Transport also filed an application for protection of that information. The request is to protect the information from public disclosure pursuant to North Dakota Century Code Section 44-04-24. On May 1st, 2023, intervener John H. Warford Jr. Revocable Trust filed an objection to the application and request for hearing. Today's hearing was scheduled to hear oral arguments regarding SCS Carbon Transport's application. The issue to be considered is whether the application to protect information should be granted. I'm now going to ask the parties to make their appearance for the record. On behalf of the applicant, we have Mr. Curry and Mr. Glutt. Would you like to please state your appearances for the record?
Yes, thank you, Judge. Tyler Glutt, Frederickson and Byron, PA, Bismarck, North Dakota, on behalf of the applicant, SCS Carbon Transport, LLC.
Good morning, Judge. I'm Jim Curry. I'm at the law firm of Babs Calland. My office is located at 505 9th Street, Northwest, Suite 602, Washington, D.C., 2004. I appear today as counsel for Summit Carbon Transport, LLC.
And I'll note that a motion for pro hoc vice status was filed by Mr. Glutt, I believe, filed the motion on behalf of Mr. Curry on Friday. And Mr. Glutt, can you just confirm that the required fees have been paid to the Bar Association?
Yes, Judge. I believe Mr. Bender may have actually signed off on there, but we included both myself and Mr. Bender as a potential local counsel that may appear with him. And we did receive acknowledgement from the State Board of Law Examiners of receipt of Mr. Curry's fee.
All right. I have reviewed the motion and it does appear to satisfy all the other requirements of the rule. I have not yet issued a written order, but I will do that after this hearing. But for the record, I will grant the motion to appear pro hoc vice in this matter. Mr. Pelham, would you like to state your appearance for the record?
Good morning, Judge. Zachary Pelham, Special Assistant Attorney General on behalf of the Public Service Commission. To my left is Victor Shook, Public Utilities Director. Thank you.
And on behalf of the interveners, Mr. Leibel, would you like to state your appearance for the record?
Sure, Judge. Steve Leibel on behalf of landowner interveners.
And Mr. Bakke, would you like to make your appearance for the record?
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning. Yeah, it's on. Randy Bakke on behalf of interveners John Warford, Chad Wachter, and Chad Moldenauer.
And I will note we have one more intervener in this case, the Liuna, and their representative is Mr. Pranis, and he is not appearing for this hearing. And from my recollection, Liuna has not taken a position on this particular motion. As indicated in the notice, the commission will only be receiving oral argument on the motion this morning. And as discussed prior to today's hearing, each party will be given 20 minutes to present oral arguments to the commissioners. The applicant will go first, followed by the interveners. So with that, I will turn to you, Mr. Curry, if you want to begin your argument.
Great. Thank you, Judge. Good morning, commissioners. Today, I'll argue on behalf of Summit on its application to protect certain confidential information filed with the North Dakota PSC, related to its application for a siting certificate for the proposed Midwest Carbon Express pipeline project. I and Summit welcome the opportunity to be heard today. Before getting into the specifics and the bases of the application itself and the information protections available for the materials that we've submitted, I thought it would be helpful to provide a bit of background information in terms of the relevance and role of dispersion modeling and things like pipeline safety and the federal pipeline safety oversight program administered by the federal government through the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration. As a former attorney at PHMSA, I'm familiar with all of PHMSA's pipeline safety programs, including the regulations that apply to CO2 pipelines. And most of my practice today relates to PHMSA's programs and how they are implemented throughout the country, including here in North Dakota. Summit seeks to construct and operate an interstate CO2 pipeline system in several states, including approximately 320 miles here in North Dakota. If constructed, the pipeline will join the existing approximately 5,300 miles of liquid pipelines here in the state of North Dakota and more than 12,000 miles of gas pipelines already in operation here in the state, all of which are subject to safety regulations. The safety aspects of Summit's proposed pipeline are regulated by PHMSA under the Pipeline Safety Act and the pipeline safety regulations for hazardous liquid and CO2 pipelines at 49 CFR Part 195. PHMSA has exclusive jurisdiction to regulate the safety aspects of interstate CO2 pipelines and has done so since 1991. PHMSA administers an active pipeline inspection and enforcement program under which it inspects operators, including CO2 operators, frequently. And in those inspections, PHMSA provides guidance on how operators can improve their safety performance. As part of this oversight, the agency also issues enforcement actions, including orders directing compliance and civil penalties. The agency safety regulations provide detailed safety standards for design, construction, really everything from kind of cradle to grave, from before you even put a shovel in the ground till the abandonment of the facility. So things like emergency response, public awareness, a program called integrity management, which ends up being pretty relevant to the materials that that Summit has filed, as well as other aspects of pipeline safety. PHMSA safety standards generally follow a risk-based approach. And what does that mean? It means that more stringent standards apply to pipelines the closer they are to people and sensitive environmental locations. Those locations under Part 195 are called high consequence areas. We call them HCAs. To determine what parts of a pipeline could affect those sensitive areas, operators conduct detailed analyses of several factors, including location, land terrain, topography, the nature and characteristics of the material being transported, various operational parameters, and physical pathways between the pipeline and the HCA, or the high consequence area, And this is really kind of where dispersion modeling plays its role. One of the few areas where it plays its role in Part 195. And so these efforts to figure out what happens to material when it gets out of a pipeline, they're often called spill modeling or release modeling, and they take different forms depending on the commodity. So for an oil pipeline, you'd do an overland transport analysis. You'd look at things like drain tiles in a farm field, or dry creek beds to try to figure out if you did have a release, where would it go? And for CO2, we do slightly different modeling called dispersion modeling. CO2 doesn't flow on the ground like an oil does. It creates a vapor cloud. As related to CO2 pipelines, PHMSA has stated in guidance and in precedential enforcement cases, its expectations that operators perform vapor dispersion modeling and do certain things and consider certain factors when they do that modeling to figure out and determine physical pathways for transporting the vapor, CO2 vapor. So we have some integrity management FAQs that the agency has issued. They've been out for many years. FAQ 3.4 gets into dispersion modeling. And then we have a series of cases in which PHMSA has specifically opined on the quality of operators' dispersion modelings. There's actually a case here in North Dakota, the Dakota gasification case from 2018, where PHMSA came in, did a routine inspection here in North Dakota, and cited the operator of that CO2 pipeline for not evaluating terrain effects when looking at its dispersion modeling. So when you model a CO2 release, you can't just assume the ground is flat, right? You have to look for low spots where the CO2 might go. You have to look for valleys, changes in elevation that could serve essentially as a conduit for CO2. There's also a series of Denbury cases that were issued in response to an accident that Denbury had in Mississippi a few years ago, where the agency also cited Denbury for not doing adequate air dispersion or vapor dispersion modeling. These cases demonstrate that PHMSA is active on dispersion modeling issues, including here in North Dakota, and that it will step in and issue enforcement actions, take other measures when it believes dispersion modeling is inadequate. And where a CO2, let's talk about more about the role of dispersion modeling, where a CO2 operator determines through that model that a failure of a segment could affect a high consequence area, it's required to develop, among other things, an integrity management plan for those parts of the pipeline. Now, the integrity management plan is sort of an overlay. You have the basic Part 195 regulations, you know, design, construction, operation, maintenance, corrosion control. And then over atop that, you have the integrity management requirements, which are a set of heightened, much more stringent requirements for pipeline safety that apply specifically in areas where people or sensitive environmental locations are located. Excuse me. The heart of any integrity management plan is a risk analysis. Sometimes it's also called a risk assessment, which is required under the integrity management regulations. CO2 pipeline operators must use the risk analysis to identify what are called preventive and mitigative measures to further public safety and environmental protection. So what's preventative and what's mitigative? Preventive is just like it sounds. You put additional measures in to prevent an accident from ever occurring. Mitigative is on the other side. If an accident occurs, you put measures in place to reduce the consequences of such an accident. Those actions might include more frequent inspections of the pipeline, enhanced training, pipeline personnel, additional public outreach and education, additional installation of valves, and a host of other measures. It's sort of a performance-based part of the regulations, and operators have are only limited by their own creativity in terms of additional measures that they can apply, but they have to be reasonable. So to properly develop a risk analysis and identify these measures, Summit must consider and apply the information obtained from its dispersion model. It's important to note that while Summit is only required to apply this integrity management program to the really quite limited areas along the pipeline that could affect high consequence areas, it has nonetheless decided to apply its integrity management plan to the entire pipeline system, including the entirety of the mileage in North Dakota. In addition, Summit has met with PHMSA twice to discuss its approach to pipeline safety. In those meetings, Summit specifically sought and received PHMSA's feedback on dispersion modeling. We went in and asked PHMSA, what have you learned from recent events? What have you learned over time? What can you tell us here at Summit about how to do the best dispersion model we can? And the agency did provide feedback on that. Summit has also studied the available information on past failures and PHMSA enforcement, those cases that I mentioned earlier, as well as others related to dispersion model, in an effort to incorporate all the learnings it could into its current model. As noted in Summit's application to protect, the dispersion modeling information is used for other purposes as well, including development of our emergency response plans, public awareness plans. And specifically by understanding where CO2 may go in the unlikely event of an incident, Summit can allocate prevention and mitigation resources to areas that are more sensitive. I hope you found that background helpful. Now I'll turn to a discussion of the application to protect itself and the various bases for protection of the model and risk assessment related materials. Summit's application to protect is based on the sensitive nature of information contained in these documents. Specifically, they contain confidential business information that if released would pose security risks. And these are not hypothetical risks, I'll get to that later. As a result, these materials would be protected from disclosure under both state and federal law. Accordingly, Summit respectfully requests that the Commission grant its April 21st, 2023 application to protect these materials. I thought it would be appropriate to start with the state law protections available for these materials and then talk a little bit about the federal protections that may also be available. The dispersion model and risk assessment information is protected under the North Dakota Open Records Law. Much like PHMSA and other federal agencies, North Dakota has recognized the need to keep certain sensitive information relating to pipelines confidential. The modeling and risk assessment documentation should be protected from disclosure under North Dakota Century Code Section 44-4-24. Under that section, so-called security system plans kept by a public entity, in this case the Commission, and records regarding disaster mitigation, preparation, response, vulnerability, or recovery are exempt from disclosure. A security system plan is broadly defined to include, among other things, threat assessments, vulnerability and capability assessments, threat response plans, and emergency evacuation plans. The information in the documents provided to the Commission constitute a security system plan. The dispersion modeling and risk analysis information assesses threats to the pipeline, identifies sensitive locations along the pipeline, the potential for failure, preventative and mitigative measures, and consequence modeling to inform emergency response activities, all information that is squarely within the definition of security system plan. This information relates directly to the physical security of the pipeline, as it could be used to selectively target sensitive areas of the line. Next, we'll go through some of the federal protections that could be applied. While both North Dakota and the federal law, which is the Freedom of Information Act, or we'll call it FOIA today, lean towards providing government records, that's certainly clear. You know, there's a tendency towards transparency. However, there are important and well-founded public policy limits on this tendency to release. We face these limits here today. They're security-related limits. The federal protections under the FOIA are motivated by some of the same policy concerns as those underpinning the North Dakota law. As such, it's instructive to consider them in conjunction with any evaluation of state law information protections. Indeed, in a 1998 North Dakota Attorney General's guidance document, the AG noted that North Dakota should consider federal FOIA law and cases when evaluating state-level exemptions to disclosure. Although the FOIA generally allows for disclosure of records kept by a federal agency, a range of materials are exempt from those disclosure requirements. Summit respectfully contends that the dispersion modeling and risk analysis related documents it provided to the PSC would qualify for protection from disclosure by PHMSA under FOIA, pursuant to at least two exemptions, FOIA Exemption 7F and Exemption 4. 7F is the more relevant exemption. It has to deal with security related information, so we'll start there. Under Exemption 7F, information compiled for law enforcement purposes that could reasonably be expected to endanger the life or physical safety of any individual is exempt from disclosure. Now, when we say compiled for law enforcement purposes, that's basically anything in PHMSA's possession that relates to compliance and its oversight programs. So it's a pretty broad construction of what that is. And PHMSA has determined that documents containing certain kinds of pipeline information, not all, but certain limited information that would allow others to target and damage or destroy infrastructure would be protected from disclosure. PHMSA has specifically noted that spill modeling data in the context of oil pipelines, for example, that could be used to rank desirable targets would be protected from disclosure under Exemption 7F. Courts have actually weighed in on PHMSA's determinations under 7F, including in the context of the Dakota Access Pipeline. There's a federal district court case from 2017 that specifically looked at this issue. There was a challenge to a federal records protection claim by PHMSA over spill modeling information related to the DAPL. And in that context, the DC Federal District Court made a finding that certain oil spill related information, including things like maps of pipeline at certain crossings, the names of segments, when you paired that with other information, timelines for detecting and shutting down spills, for example, risk scoring information, maps of spill scenarios, predictions of volumes, all that would be protected. Now, there's a whole lot of other information that can sometimes be related to those issues that isn't protected, but these really sensitive pieces of information must be protected. And this is the same kind of information that Summit has sought to protect here. The dispersion modeling documentation explains how the modeling was performed. It explains release scenarios and types of releases that could occur, locations where impacts could result, including high consequence areas, and other sensitive information. If released to the public, someone with nefarious purposes could identify which specific pipeline segments to target. This information is squarely prevented from disclosure under Exemption 7F. And this isn't a hypothetical risk. I mean, there have been a number of attacks on pipeline infrastructure over the years. I went through some report outs by the FBI and other intelligence agencies that are publicly available. Just to provide a few examples, in Montana, 2021, two individuals were convicted of intentionally targeting and shooting at a diesel pipeline, resulting in a spill into a waterway and a felony Clean Water Act series of violations. In Ohio in 2019, two individuals pled guilty for plotting terrorist attack against an interstate pipeline. Closer to home here, there were obviously a number of attacks against DAPL in terms of cutting holes in the pipeline and arson attacks of construction equipment that caused millions of dollars in damage. So targeting pipelines has happened, unfortunately. Obviously, there's been some recent media coverage of this well. A movie, How to Blow Up a Pipeline, recently was issued just in the last few months and caused quite consternation at the FBI, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and multiple state agencies were concerned that that movie could serve as inspiration for an attack on infrastructure. So these risks are not hypothetical. That's Exemption 7F. Next, I'll briefly touch on Exemption 4. Exemption 4 is a lot broader. It covers confidential commercial information that's also exempt from disclosure. And basically, in this instance, we would ask for protection from PHMSA for the dispersion model and risk analysis materials because they're confidential, which under Exemption 4 means they're the kinds of materials that are customarily treated as private and not released to the public, and because they're commercial materials relating to technical design and modeling information. That's just briefly on Exemption 4. I'll wrap up here with a third and final potential sort of source of federal information protection, and that's a program administered by the Department of Homeland Security called the Security Sensitive Information Program. That's under 49 CFR Part 1520, and that protects certain information that would reveal confidential information or be detrimental to the security of transportation, specifically in this case. The dispersion modeling and risk analysis, we believe, would constitute a vulnerability assessment subject to protection if submitted to the TSA, which is a sub-agency of the Department of Homeland Security. So that covers it. I see I have about 2 minutes left. Judge, may I reserve my final 2 minutes for rebuttal?
Yes.
Thank you.
And I'll just ask before we move to the interveners, are there any questions from the commissioners for Mr. Curry?
I do not, Your Honor.
I have no questions.
No questions, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you. And now I will turn to interveners, and it's my understanding that Mr. Leibel, you're going to go first. All right. Go ahead.
Good morning, Commissioners. As you know, my name is Steve Leibel. I represent the landowner interveners. I wanted to begin first by discussing what we're here about and kind of how this came about. As you know, there was a lot of discussion during the hearings about the dispersion modeling or the plume modeling. I understand that their submission includes a number of other documents, some specific safety response plans, an integrity management plan, and, you know, as I'm going to discuss a little bit later, I certainly would agree with some of what Mr. Curry had said, that there is a legitimate interest in keeping some of that confidential. But I'm going to focus for the purpose of this on the dispersion analysis, which is important for three reasons. The first reason, of course, is risk avoidance. One of the issues that have been discussed during these hearings is the 500-foot setback. Is that reasonable? Is it proper in the context of a CO2 pipeline? One of the reasons for risk avoidance is we want to avoid impact on existing structures, existing schools, but also to allow people to make their own decisions. We've heard a lot of testimony from some of the Bismarck developers represented by Mr. Bakke that people are going to, and people are making decisions that they don't want to be located next to this pipeline. This information, especially the plume modeling, would be helpful to that. The second, of course, is risk management. For those places within the danger zone, the idea of figuring out what should be done, one of the discussions with during the one of the hearings was the safety valves, the shutoff valves, whether they're properly spaced at 20 miles or whether they should be spaced closer. And one of the things I think is important is for people to make their own understanding and their own analysis based on what a cataclysmic failure looks like. Finally, of course, is the issue of emergency response. We've heard from both Emmons County and Burley County talk about, you know, the we need this information because we want to know what our first responders need to be trained at. And while I understand there are some confidentiality, I have trouble believing that this entire model is all the information, including the plume study, should be kept confidential, especially when we have, you know, PHMSA obviously didn't believe that it was necessary to keep the Satartia dispersion modeling confidential. The reason that's important is because in order to determine risk, you have to know the probability of the event versus the consequence to the public. And at this point, as members of the landowner interveners, we don't really know either of these variables except very generally. The other thing that we need to know is, assuming the dispersion analysis would be become public, is we would need some information so we could investigate it. You know, what is the weight? How much credibility does this person have? What methodology did they follow? Basically, the ordinary things that in any courtroom would be relevant to any fact finder. And like I said earlier, you know, everyone understands generally that some of this information absolutely should remain private for some of the reasons that Mr. Curry discussed. But the idea that all of it should can't be right. One of the things I did in preparing for this, my original discussion was I probably don't need to say very much because I know Mr. Bakke will cover just about everything. And as I was going through this, I just wanted to look through the statutes enough so I understood where the real conflict point is. Where is the issue that the commission is going to need to weigh in on so I could add my comments and restrict it just to that issue? And so I started with, Judge Hogan, if I could approach the commission, I've just printed out the statutes so I can kind of walk through the issues.
Sure. Yes. Thank you.
And so what I've provided the commission is a printout of Chapter 4404, and this, of course, is our public records statute in North Dakota. And I wanted to begin by first making, you know, clear that our default in North Dakota is that information is public, and especially information that's determined by any records of a public entity. And certainly we believe that this default rule would apply to this information that was provided to the PSC. Now, the section, the exemption that was discussed by Mr. Curry can be found on page 23. So it's in the bottom. You'll see the page numbers from this printout. Page 23 is where 440424, the security system plan language can be found. And so I started by going through this because this is our North Dakota statute, our North Dakota exemption to, you know, whether or not this information is public. And as I was going through this, you know, the first thing is in under subsection one, a security system plan kept by a public entity and records regarding disaster mitigation, preparation, response, vulnerability, or recovery, or for cybersecurity planning, is exempt from section 18. So that's the general public records production. And as I read that, I mean, it really comes down to the issue of how broadly is it fair in the context of this statute generally to read it broadly enough that anything as part of a mitigation plan is absolutely confidential. You know, especially because that really for, I would say, you know, the majority of the testimony that the commission heard, the response of the public was concerns about safety. And where a, you know, this same information can be gathered from generally from the Satarsha, Mississippi report that's already admitted. So where is the security system plan? And I would submit that there's a difference between a plan and an event. You know, Mr. Curry talked a great deal about this is, you know, the importance of our plan. We have to be able to not give a roadmap to someone that intends to do a bad thing. Well, that's very different than what the consequence of the bad thing. Again, the public has no way to weigh, you know, the summit submission or even the decision from the commission without knowing what is the consequence. What are you all weighing in deciding on this application? What is the ultimate threat to the public? And that information can only be found in that dispersion analysis. And under the definition of a security system plan, as I read this, it is much more focused on the plan, the response. Certainly, I can see where there could be specific pieces of information within a packet, within a submission, like I'm assuming the PSC has received, but the idea that it all, especially this issue of the consequence, should remain confidential to me isn't consistent with this reading of the statute. So I next went to what I assumed would be the federal FOIA, and I brought it with, I'm gonna not provide that copy because I felt like Mr. Curry gave a pretty good summary. But the issue as I read that, it talks about documents that a law enforcement agency. Now, I understand their argument is that, well, PHMSA is a law enforcement agency. PHMSA has made these, you know, determinations. And in fact, the district court, you know, they listed a 2017 district court case, some examples in Montana in 2022, a 2019 violation in Ohio. None of this stuff was in their brief. I don't know if that's because the Washington, D.C. guy knows stuff that the rest of us don't. I mean, that's certainly possible, but ordinarily that's not right to come and for the first time at a hearing, throw a bunch of information out that we haven't had a chance to look at or vet. The next issue, of course, is, so I next turn to the information they cite in their brief about this sensitive security information. And I assume that if this is such a big deal that PHMSA itself would have a regulation that, hey, when you submit dispersion modeling, this is confidential. It doesn't go to the public. Again, when you look at 49 CFR 1520, and I would be happy to give, I brought copies for the commission if I may approach.
Sure.
So this is the section of the statute 1520 that actually contains the sensitive security information that Mr. Curry referenced. This is the actual statute, or I guess it would be the regulation. And if you look to the second page, that 1520.5, that's the sensitive security information citation that they use in their brief. And first of all, I wanted to point out that there is no, apparently no regulation, no code provision, nothing that says PHMSA requires a dispersion plume model, it's confidential. Everything requires a little bit of, you know, some generous interpretation from our perspective to encompass this document, or at least all of this document. And again, this sensitive security information talks about a information obtained or developed in the conduct of security activities, including research and development, the disclosure of which the TSA has determined would, and then they list three things that are possible. Well, you know, first of all, we don't have a determination from the TSA, at least that I'm aware of. They haven't provided one to that. If you look at the second one, part B, it says, except as otherwise provided in writing by the TSA, in the interest of public safety or the furtherance of transportation security, the following information constitute SSI. And then they list a number of them. Summit is taking the position, if you look on, this would be page 3 of 10, subsection 5, there's a vulnerability assessment, and it says any vulnerability assessment directed, created, held, funded, or approved by the DOT, DHS, or that will be provided to DOT or DHS in support of a federal security program. And so again, I read this, and to me, this is the legal equivalent of a round peg in a square hole. I mean, I can see there's a possibility that a federal judge somewhere could look at this and pull the regulatory history, pull the information from these appropriate agencies and determine that, okay, that's close enough, but it certainly is not conclusive. And that's one of the things as I was going through this document, this idea that something that's so important that really is the very heart of what the public is wanting to know and wanting to understand, that we're going to withhold that information based upon kind of a flim-flam of nothing that's very clear that would ever address all of this information, when the agency certainly, or the Congress certainly could have kept this confidential. That's all I have.
All right. Mr. Leibel, I have you at 14 and a half minutes. It's my understanding you wanted to cede the rest of your time to Mr.
Yes, Bakke. That's correct.
So, Mr. Bakke, you would then have 24 and a half minutes. Maybe Ken.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Members of the commission, I want to focus on some things that haven't been covered by Mr. Leibel, and then also respond to some of the arguments by Mr. Curry. And the first thing I would point out, it is Summit's burden here to show to the commission that this information does present a security concern or is confidential, as they assert, so that the public and the interveners and the city and the county and the emergency responders cannot see this information. And they clearly have not met that burden under either state law or federal law. But one of the issues that has to be considered here is any information that Summit provides needs to be scrutinized. So the commission needs to ask itself, what opportunity has the commission had? What opportunity have the interveners had? What opportunity has the city of Bismarck, Burleigh County, the interveners had to scrutinize this information? Because Summit has consistently throughout this proceeding taken the position that this pipeline is, in their words, entirely safe. but yet they want to, in secret, provide this information to the PSC, not share it with the public, not share it with the city, and say, just trust us. Be willing to take that risk, citizens of Burley County and Bismarck, with no opportunity to question, no opportunity to scrutinize the information they provided to the PSC only. And importantly, the PSC has not had an opportunity to scrutinize this information. Have they presented one witness to the PSC that the PSC could question about this dispersion modeling to find out important information, such as who prepared it? What was the level of experience of that individual or the individuals involved in doing dispersion modeling? How many pipelines have they built before that contain CO2? What assumptions have they made? What was the pressure? Where was the leak? You don't have any of that information. All you have is an unchallenged report. And one of the functions of the PSC is to scrutinize all the information that's provided to you and determine, is it reliable? You've had no opportunity to do that, nor have the interveners had any opportunity to question a witness or the author, the unknown author of this dispersion modeling. No opportunity at all. And we've requested that opportunity at multiple hearings, and never has Summit presented a witness in that regard. That's completely unlike other situations before, including Satarsha, Mississippi. And I'm glad Mr. Curry mentioned DGC, because I went back and I looked at what did the PSC receive from DGC back with its application on May 11, 2007. And that's still publicly available information on the PSC document for that proceeding. Well, with the application to the PSC, what did DGC provide to the PSC in order to allow the PSC to assess that application? And what information did they provide publicly? Because the reality is Summit is asking to be held to a different standard than the PSC has required before, and a different and lower standard than DGC complied with, a North Dakota company. They're asking for an exemption. They're saying, we shouldn't have to do what others have had to do before us. So what did DGC provide way back in 2007? Because they keep holding out DGC as an example of a safe pipeline for CO2 that's been in existence for many years in North Dakota. Well, in the application itself, in other words, it wasn't later in the PSC hearing, in the application itself, they provided information on the dispersion modeling they had already done. And it showed the extent of the area that would be affected by a rupture or leak. They modeled a catastrophic failure, a worst case scenario. They did a worst case scenario of the highest concentration of CO2 at the greatest distances. It was a smaller pipeline, 12 inches, and they determined how far away that concentration of CO2 would travel. They modeled at multiple locations along the 167-mile pipeline in North Dakota of that CO2 pipeline, a much shorter, and they considered weather conditions, provided all of that on the front end. Well, what else did they do? In its application, DGC had already developed an emergency response plan. They had engaged in pre-emergency planning and education. They had operational safety precautions set up for the pipeline. They had emergency response procedures in place. They had associated agency coordination. They had addressed animal health and safety and plant life effects. And they had, importantly, they had already distributed emergency preparedness information to local emergency responders and law enforcement. So they'd already distributed all of that information, engaged in all those efforts at the time they submitted their application. I would suggest to you, DGC did what a responsible company building a CO2 pipeline would do. It was fully transparent with the commission, with the public, with emergency responders, with law enforcement, and it was proactive in doing all these things before it even submitted its application. And I think the question the PSC has to ask itself is, are we going to allow Summit to be held to a lower standard, a different standard than other CO2 pipelines in North Dakota have complied with previously? And then in relation to the statutes, and I'm not going to go over what Mr. Leibel already covered, but they rely on the security system plan exemption under NDCC 440424, which Mr. Leibel provided a copy to you. And subpart 2A defines critical infrastructure. And they haven't explained how this Summit pipeline, this CO2 pipeline, complies with the definition under the statute of critical infrastructure, because they have to show critical structure is defined as something so vital to the state that the incapacity or destruction of these systems would have a debilitating effect on security, state economic security, state public health, or safety, or any combination of those matters. Well, this is not vital to the state at all. This is a private company bringing in waste, pollution from other states and asking to dump it in North Dakota. It's their responsibility to show it's so vital to the state, and that would affect the state economic security and the other things that I mentioned. They haven't done that. And so that's a required element under that statute that they cannot meet. It's also not a security system plan because it doesn't relate to directly to the physical or electronic security of the system involved. And bear in mind here that, and of course, we haven't seen what they filed with the PSC, but what their submission suggests is that they have filed only the model outputs of the plume study with the PSC. That's what they've represented in their filing, not the entire plume study. And they talk about DAPL, and they request in their brief that the PSC rely on some Associated Press news articles. I can tell you that Mr. Curry is incorrect in terms of what happened in DAPL. Our firm has been involved since the summer of 2016 in representing law enforcement on numerous legal matters, including all the lawsuits, the seven lawsuits currently on file in federal court in North Dakota against law enforcement. So we have intimate knowledge on that, and any damage on the DAPL pipeline occurred before there was any product in that pipeline, and it was not holes, as Mr. Curry suggested. And then he points to a situation where someone shot a pipeline. You don't need the security information to go out and shoot at a pipeline or to figure out what the potential damage could be. So the examples they're raising simply aren't on point and aren't a basis to keep their information confidential. And all the arguments that they make about Section 7 Act and Exemption 4, those all get the cart before the horse, because those are requirements once you have obtained PHMSA approval. They concede they have not obtained PHMSA approval for this pipeline. And Mr. Curry talked about that there's been two meetings by Summit with PHMSA, and PHMSA is providing some input. That's, once again, to my knowledge, not evidence before the PSC. The only one who has said that is Mr. Curry. There's been no witness who has come in and testified at any hearing I was at where they said, yes, we've gone to PHMSA, we've had two meetings, this is the feedback they gave us. None of that is part of the record in the case. So whether it's accurate or not, but it's certainly not before the PSC. But they concede they haven't provided their plume study to PHMSA. And in relation to the federal statutes, if you look at 49 CFR 195.402E and 195.408, that they rely on in their briefing in this case, those statutes have nothing to do with dispersion modeling. They deal with the procedures after the pipeline is built, after the pipeline is approved by PHMSA, as to what local law enforcement information is provided. And we've conceded in our brief, and we agree with Mr. Leibel, there are certain things that could be confidential, that could be protected, that the public doesn't need to know, such as after the pipeline is built, what a local law enforcement's plan might be responding to emergency. But what they're asking for is not covered by these federal statutes and not supported in any way. There are arguments. And I thought it was interesting that Mr. Curry indicated PHMSA has exclusive jurisdiction. So if PHMSA has exclusive jurisdiction, shouldn't this commission wait until PHMSA weighs in on the new regulations that are planned and in the works for 2024 before it addresses their application overall? They're essentially admitting today that their application is premature if PHMSA has exclusive jurisdiction. But they want to have it both ways. They want to say Burleigh County with their ordinances, Emmons County's with their ordinance doesn't have jurisdiction because PHMSA do. But they're saying PHMSA has exclusive jurisdiction, so the PSC should wait until the PHMSA has weighed in. And in relation to the federal statutes, when you look at those, it also deals with a procedural manual to be on site and available in the event of a leak. So all the statutes that they're relying on, the federal statutes, are based upon what happens after the pipeline is built and what information might be confidential or a security concern. That's not what we're dealing with here. And they don't address the public health and safety matters related to this. They don't talk about allowing independent experts to review their plume study. And they say, well, PHMSA has suggested to Denbury and DGC that you have to do certain things to improve your safety plan in the event of a leak. Isn't that the whole purpose of the PSC scrutinizing and allowing the interveners in the city and the county and the citizens is to scrutinize that so that if there is some flaw, so that through independent experts, the questions can be asked so that they can have a accurate dispersion modeling to present to the PSC that may require some alterations or safety changes. Bear in mind here that we're talking about what Mr. Curry defined as a high consequence area. That's why my clients are involved in this matter, is because the area where this pipeline is going through Burleigh County, particularly in North and East Bismarck, is a high consequence area as defined under the statutes and under PHMSA. Under those circumstances, it's particularly important to be allowed to vet this information, to ask questions, to scrutinize that information, to test it, to make sure it doesn't pose any public safety risk. And I'll simply close by saying, I'm not as smart as a Washington, D.C. attorney, and probably not near as expensive, but my question is, what is Summit trying to hide?
All right, thank you. Are there any commission questions for either the intervener attorneys?
None for me.
I have no questions.
No questions.
All right. Mr. Curry, you still have 2 minutes, so go ahead.
Okay, thanks very much. A lot to say in 2 minutes. Summit's not trying to hide anything. Summit has submitted a variety of sensitive security information to the PSC for their review, and we're happy to continue conversations with the commission on that front. And if there are additional information, pieces of information the commission requires, we're happy to have those conversations. So not trying to hide anything. A couple of other points I'll make. In terms of Mr. Bakke's comment on why don't we just wait for PHMSA's new rules, If you did that, no pipeline would ever be built or operated in the United States. PHMSA is constantly in the process of updating and changing its rules. It has had CO2 pipeline regulations in place with a good safety record since 1991. So I think, you know, waiting for whatever PHMSA is going to do, which, you know, could just be fine tuning of those rules, I don't think is in anybody's interests. In terms of the arguments around FOIA issues that FOIA, for some reason, only attaches once PHMSA approves a pipeline. PHMSA does not approve pipeline facilities. It has a lot of jurisdiction, but it's not a certificating agency in the way that, say, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission is for other types of pipelines. PHMSA has a robust inspection and enforcement program, but it doesn't approve facilities. The FOIA rules apply to any records in PHMSA's possession, and we intend to apply these to submit these dispersion model documentation to PHMSA. So FOIA would apply to anything in the agency's possession. In terms of the comment that you could just shoot, where you could shoot a pipeline, you know, you don't need any security sensitive information to find that pipeline and shoot it. I think that oversimplifies the point. The problem with broad public release of the information that we're talking about is that it allows you to selectively target an asset for maximum destruction. So it's not just seeing a pipeline and shooting at it. It's understanding kind of the various places that if you wanted to cause harm, you could cause the most harm. What else can I say? In terms of the 440424 arguments that, this pipeline does not qualify as critical infrastructure, I don't think the commission needs to reach that question. I think there are independent bases for concluding that the materials we've submitted are security system plans. You can find those in 440424 2B, 3 through 6, which do not rely on a designation of critical infrastructure. Dakota gasification, you know, we live in a different world than we, unfortunately, than we did in 2007. And I can tell you just from my own experience with clients all around the country, in 2007, people were a lot less worried about pipeline security than they are today. A lot has happened since then. And so I have clients who, you know, probably would have submitted things without thinking about it. People don't do that now because of incidents that have occurred on DAPL and other pipelines. People are much more careful. And PHMSA is much more careful about the information. So there's kind of an arc of history here that we need to take into consideration. So whatever might be available in past dockets, I think reflected the context of that time. And we're in a different context now. We'll also add that Summit has engaged in, I think there was an implication, Summit is not engaged with emergency responders. Summit has engaged with emergency response agencies in all the affected counties. Been in contact with them and has had conversations with them. There's more work to be done there, but that outreach and effort has begun and has been robust. I think that brings me to the end of my time here. I'm happy to provide any of the additional information that was not included in our previous briefing to you all in a subsequent filing, if you wish, with citations to authority and documentation. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any commission questions for Mr. Curry?
None for me.
No?
No questions.
None.
All right. The commission does not intend to decide this motion this morning. The commission will take this matter under advisement and issue an order at a later date. Is there anything else for the record before we conclude? All right, seeing none, I will note for the record that it is 9:29 a.m. and that will conclude our hearing for today. Thank you.